Life Without a Tie by Ray Martin. Read by Ray Martin. Introduction. The Journey Ahead. In India during the 1930s, a young boy had become obsessed with eating a lot of sugar. His mother was very upset about it, but no matter how hard she tried to break his habit, he continued to satisfy his sweet tooth. Totally frustrated, she decided to take her son to see Mahatma Gandhi, who was the boy's idol. Being many miles away, she had to walk for hours in the scorching sun to reach Gandhi's ashram. There, she recounted her difficult journey and shared with Gandhi her unpleasant situation. "Bapu, my son eats too much sugar. It's not good for his health. Would you please advise him to stop eating it?" Gandhi listened to the woman carefully and thought for a while. He replied, "Please come back after 2 weeks and I will talk to your son." Confused, the woman took her boy by the hand and left. She made the long journey home, and 2 weeks later, they returned as Gandhi requested. When they arrived, Gandhi looked directly at the boy and said, "Boy, you should stop eating sugar. It's not good for your health." The boy nodded and promised he would stop immediately. The boy's mother was puzzled. She turned to Gandhi and asked, "Bapu, why didn't you tell him that 2 weeks ago when I brought him here to see you?" Gandhi smiled and said, "Mother, 2 weeks ago I was not qualified to advise the boy because I was eating a lot of sugar myself. Now I have stopped." 20 years ago, you might have considered me unqualified to write the book you are about to listen to. At that time, my main goal in life was being a successful and admired businessman. And back then, you might have labelled me as such. I was married to a wonderful woman, and we were blessed with a high income and a comfortable, affluent lifestyle. Together, we created a profitable and highly regarded leadership development, coaching, and training business. The constant challenges of running and expanding the company kept me growing too. It brought out the best in me. Public recognition of this came in 2002 when the Daily Telegraph, a leading UK newspaper, selected me to receive their Business Leadership Award, acknowledging my work as an exemplary CEO. It was a dream come true for me. Consequently, people admired me and some asked me for guidance about life, happiness and success. They thought of me as someone who had life handled, although the reality was quite different. They had no idea just how fragile my persona was. That isn't surprising because I kept some parts of myself well hidden from everybody, including those closest to me. Despite this public recognition, I struggled to feel worthy of it. In the first chapter of my story, I take you briefly back to that period. There it becomes clear that behind my confident outward appearance, my appetite for taking risks in life and for really stretching myself had been slowly shrinking, and it gave rise to a feeling of shame. In my early 40s, I'd settled into a comfort zone. I felt increasingly lousy, unattractive, and I looked older than my years. I was dissatisfied with myself. Back then, I avoided making big changes because they seemed too risky. I was worried I might lose the money, status, and privileges that life had given me. I had firmly established a reputation as someone who could set and achieve ambitious goals and financial targets. No one pushed harder than me to make their business grow, no matter what the obstacles, how much energy it took, or what pain had to be suffered. Despite that, I rarely felt truly happy. My friends would sometimes say, "Why don't you take a break?" When I heard this, I think, "I haven't got time, I'm too busy achieving my goals," and dismissed the suggestion immediately. True happiness remained elusive, and always promised to arrive sometime in the future, after the next achievement. I found it hard to fully appreciate and enjoy what I already had. The fear of being exposed threatened me, so I directed my energy into obsessively maintaining my successful image no matter what. It was too dangerous to acknowledge the raw facts within my reality. Most of the time I pretended that none of this was going on. Most of us are pretty good at deceiving ourselves, not to mention others. I hoped things would somehow change without me having to reveal my dilemma or do anything radical. Bit by bit, my happiness eroded. I guess you could say I wasn't living life true to myself, something many people experience and ultimately regret when their life comes to an end. I was trapped and I couldn't see a way out. And then my life as I knew it came crashing down. It was impossible for me to avoid making big changes any longer. In the space of just 3 months, my illusory, secure and successful life had been completely dismantled, and it took my marriage, company, home and father with it. It was devastating. I believed that happiness would never be mine again. My self-esteem crashed too. How would my family, friends and colleagues, not to mention clients, who'd heard about the crumbling of my life, judge me? It called my character into question and could potentially contradict their positive assumptions about me. My inevitable exposure as a fake, a fraud and a liar was bound to come out. It was only a matter of time. The gap between my reality and my well-groomed public image felt like a mask, a deception. Living in that gap gave me an increasingly negative outlook that had to be addressed. It became my priority. It was as if my life depended on it. I wanted to reconnect with my fundamental values and move forward. As time passed and I reflected on what had happened, many questions came to my awareness. How much of my life that had now fallen apart had really been consciously and responsibly authored by me? How often had I let other people make decisions for me? How had I been complicit in creating these unwanted conditions? I sat and pondered deeply on these questions for days. In hindsight, it was obvious that much of my time had been spent meeting everyone else's needs at the expense of my own. I realised this had to change. My mindset and way of life had served me very well up to this point, in the sense that I was successful. But it wasn't right for me any longer. My thinking went into overdrive. I tried to figure out how to escape the life I'd unconsciously built, which had been driven by materialism, status, and achievement, and which had held me captive to some extent. There had to be a way to untie myself from it. The vision of how to do it, or what the alternative might look like, eluded me for months. In my depressed and contracted state, it seemed impossible to creatively reinvent my life. Then, a stroke of luck happened. I found the story about Gandhi and the boy eating sugar, which led me to an epiphany. He asked the boy to stop eating sugar only after he'd experienced giving up sugar himself. He lived through the struggle directly to learn whatever he needed to know about the impact of such a decision. He understood he'd no authority over the boy by virtue of his job. He was not a nutritionist or a doctor. He was simply someone the boy trusted because he was an honest, transparent, and down-to-earth man. When Gandhi asked the boy to quit eating sugar, there had to be complete integrity. Perhaps that's why he always used to say, "Let your life be your message." I thought long and hard about how to apply the wisdom in Gandhi's actions. What might living true to myself mean in day-to-day life? What would be the best way to rebuild the foundations of my happiness in a joyful and sustainable way? To be honest, when these life-changing events first unfolded, I just wanted to get through it in one piece and restore my own happiness. I hadn't thought at all about the impact I might have on other people if I made fundamental changes in my own life. But as time passed, my viewpoint started to subtly change. The fact that my own life was such a mess undermined my confidence. The absence of deep self-awareness and an understanding of all the events that had happened was weighing me down. I couldn't see the path for my own life ahead of me, which compounded the feeling of heaviness. One thing I knew for sure was that I wanted to feel the same powerful integrity in my life that Gandhi had in the story with the boy. I decided to focus totally on myself for a while, for the first time in years, and really get to know myself properly once again, with the faith that the insights and wisdom I needed would come. Gandhi had always said that if you want anything to change, you must first be the change you want to see in the world. If you're a leader of any kind, it's considered essential to walk your own talk. In my hour of need, life gave me an opportunity to apply this principle in a profoundly personal way. Via my inner voice of wisdom or intuition, the universe guided me to leave my existing life for a while, become a traveller, and go on a journey. The purpose was to simply follow my heart and discover what living life true to myself meant for me. The critical task was to redesign and shape my life in a way that felt authentic and exciting, without any concern for how that might appear to anyone else. As you can imagine, that wasn't an easy thing to put into motion. We're conditioned to worry about our reputation and image, sometimes above all else. But what is the cost of that? As I contemplated and accepted this inner guidance, my inner voice continually spoke to me, and the message was pretty clear. I had to free myself from the powerful yet largely unseen influence of the silent collective for a while. I had to step out of my usual setting completely, so I'd be able to look at life again with fresh eyes. After much procrastination, the moment came when it felt right to quit being a businessman and leave the UK to start my journey. Although my rational mind argued for maintaining the status quo, my gut feeling told me something profound would come from taking a step into the unknown, and I trusted that feeling. It was scary, exhilarating, and necessary. With some careful planning, I re-engineered my life financially to get my living expenses down to the lowest level possible for a couple of years. By existing on a very modest daily budget and sacrificing some of life's luxuries, my resources took me an awfully long way without me having to worry about how to cover my basic needs. Once I'd made a viable financial plan, I ceased to take on any further coaching work from my clients. My business activities were put on indefinite hold. The universe played a major part in how my journey began. An encounter in Australia unexpectedly led me to performing live on stage as a comedic actor. That was the spark that really lit the fuse. That led to the decision to sell my house in London. I subsequently sold or gave away many of my possessions until there was virtually nothing left. Taking those steps felt a bit scary and extremely liberating. It set up the conditions for a perfect experiment. I detached myself from everything that had defined me, which gave me the freedom to move in any direction without many of the needs typically associated with identity, status, privilege, or material benefits. This put me in a great position to road test the popular theory that happiness is not to be found in any of these things, and to know absolutely if it was true or not. At 45 years of age, I probably became one of the oldest backpackers out there. When I left, I guessed that it would take me about 6 months to figure things out and return to England and start my real life again. By the time you reach the end of my story, you may be surprised just how wrong my estimate was. Over 14 years later, I eventually returned. Moment by moment and day by day, life magically unfolded in front of me in ways I could never have imagined before my departure. I was pulled apart, put back together, and learned lesson after lesson. To keep myself psychologically safe throughout, I defined 10 guiding principles. There was plenty of laughter, some heartache, and above all, the chance to improve myself throughout. My improvised journey traversed 4 different continents and 28 countries, including China, New Zealand, Tibet, and Nepal. From the beginning, as if by universal decree, people showed up for conversations that signposted turning points at just the right moments. Each one of them brought a unique gift and significantly influenced my direction, decisions, and beliefs about life. Some of these amazing people inspired me to run marathons, write, walk in the Himalayas, hike the Grand Canyon, and traverse the Nullarbor in Australia. You'll also hear about my journey into mindfulness, which began with a 10-day silent meditation retreat in a Buddhist monastery. Without the pressure of a job or any obligations, I expanded my consciousness through attending retreats, self-development workshops, and reading hundreds of books. These gave me valuable opportunities to reflect on my past. In turn, I'll invite you to reflect on your experiences as you take this journey with me. Throughout this book, I'll share the raw truth with you about my personal quest to find true love and how it took me from London to California, the Caribbean, and beyond. I'll tell you about some of the key relationships and friendships I encountered, as well as what they taught me. I made connections with wonderful people all over the world, and many have remained friends ever since. Whenever it was time for me to learn something, the right teachers came forward. They enabled me to produce a blog, learn languages, make films, teach English, and learn how to meditate. Collectively, they all contributed to a permanent change in my outlook on the world. My entire 14-year journey happened without me having a plan of any kind or a home in the conventional sense. What began as a temporary nomadic experiment has morphed into my permanent way of life. By responding to life's events and encounters in a more intuitive, courageous, open-hearted and conscious way, abundant opportunities for personal growth came my way. I inevitably embraced many of these and unintentionally became what is commonly referred to these days as a global nomad. My setup today is still comprised of my laptop computer and a bag of stuff weighing 22 kilos. Life has helped me learn how to live productively and happily with very few material possessions other than these. There's no certainty about what's coming next. That would have been hard for me to entertain as the successful business leader I was before I left. Today I'm deeply aware that my life is entirely of my own creation, and I've realised it always was. I've established a strong foundation of self-love and self-acceptance, and a deep sense of gratitude for the life that flows through my veins. Every moment feels precious. Life is simple and uncomplicated. My health is much improved, and my levels of anxiety and stress are much lower than they were. It's an amazing feeling. Through telling you this story, you'll understand how my own ties were removed, how I tested my ability to live modestly, how I learned to trust life and know with certainty that I can be happy no matter what. That doesn't mean my life is devoid of sadness or suffering. It means if and when those experiences come, I have a strong foundation of happiness and contentment, so I've no need to be fearful of those feelings. On my path, I learned how to apply kindness and compassion to myself, and know with absolute certainty that comparisons with others are no longer necessary. I guess you could say I was lucky to have had the opportunity to experiment with life in this way. On my travels, I met many people who told me they were searching for answers to life's big questions in the same way I'd been doing. We shared our stories and talked for hours. Some of them even asked me if I planned to write a book about my journey and the lessons I learned. Initially, my response was always, no. Who wants to read about someone finding themselves? But more and more people asked me the same question as time went by. After a couple of years, it dawned on me that the experimental way of living I'd chosen seemed to inspire quite a few people. They are the reason this book exists. When I began to write Life Without a Tie, it occurred to me that I was in a unique position to tell you this story. There probably aren't many people who've experienced a long, crazy, unpredictable journey like the one you'll hear about, who've also had a long and successful career in the corporate business world. I hope my story might enable you to reimagine life in a way that is meaningful to you. If you find even one useful or inspirational idea, I'll have fulfilled my purpose in writing it. In the last decade or so, I've observed a huge and growing interest in alternative models of living. People want lives that are less restrictive. They are less motivated by the acquisition of material wealth than their predecessors. In his book Stuffocation, James Wallman highlights this growing trend. He concludes that individuals now invest more of their time, energy and resources into having experiences, as opposed to owning possessions, and shows how that stance has really transformed their lives. People are moving away from values based on materialism towards values based on what he calls experientialism. This shift has been slowly gaining momentum and will eventually affect all of us. Wallman confirms something that I know deep in my bones. You can be content in life without much stuff. After 14 years of living with practically none, becoming an experientialist has been a welcome change for me. When my journey began, becoming an expert in the subject of alternative lifestyles was never my goal. If you met me today, you'd see an ordinary person engaged with life who's been on a long journey of exploration to find the path that felt right. It worked for me to follow my heart. It was hard to do at first, yet my ability to do just that continues to improve with each day, month, and year. Many of the insights I've had and the wisdom I've gleaned are now woven into my work as a coach and mentor. If you ask me, have I found the perfect life or does such a thing exist? You may be disappointed to hear, that my answer is no. Life is an ongoing journey, and out of necessity, my experimentation and exploration continues. I'm committed to becoming the best version of myself that I can be. By that I mean someone I am proud of, who I can genuinely love and accept fully with all my flaws. I may never get there, but how wonderful is it to try? How incredible is it to be open, curious, and find that you're living in a more conscious, enlightened state? Your journey and your story are different to mine and everyone else's on this planet. Maybe some of the questions I ask throughout the book will help you reflect, help you grow, make you start to question things, so you can begin or add to your own journey. If you resonate with anything in the pages that follow and feel like you want to start your own exploration, I'm here for you. Know that you have my heartfelt encouragement and support to experiment with your life in a way that works for you. I hope you enjoy the journey ahead and that yours is enriched as you travel it with me. To accept the challenge of the unknown, in spite of all fears, is courage. The fears are there, but if you go on accepting the challenge again and again, slowly, those fears disappear. The experience of joy that the unknown brings, the great ecstasy that starts happening with the unknown, makes you strong enough, gives you a certain integrity, makes your intelligence sharp. For the first time, you start feeling that life is not just a boredom, but an adventure. Then slowly, fears disappear. Then you are always seeking and searching for some adventure. Courage is risking the known for the unknown, the familiar for the unfamiliar, some unknown destination. One never knows whether one will be able to make it or not. It is gambling, but only the gamblers know what life is. Courage, the joy of living dangerously, by Osho.